Good morning, good morning. Welcome to It's Time for Affordable Housing. I'm your favorite host, LaShondra Grace, the apartment lady, founder of Apartment Housing Rentals Foundation Eviction Space. Hey, you guys, it's Monday. Oh my gosh, it's like when Monday you gotta unpack everything, but I'm so happy for planning, right? Because this whole week is unpacked and ready to go. I need you guys to go to Apartment Housing Rentals Foundation Facebook page where we're talking a lot about planning, we're giving a lot of budgeting tips and apartment rental tips. So today we talked about Atlas Asset Management. It's a management company that Apartment Housing Rentals Foundation have been dealing with for over 5 years. Their apartments are really, really nice. They're really, really affordable, and their requirements is decent. I mean, like, seriously, I mean, one of their requirements is a 580 credit score. That's something that most renters in certain neighborhoods can definitely manage. And then, you know, they require 2.5 times the rent versus someone else that may require 3 times the rent. I mean, I posted one of the apartments, 3-bedroom, 2-bath in Bronzeville for $1,300. Like, you don't get that. Stainless steel appliances, hardwood floors. I mean, this is... Yeah, so go to Apartment Housing Rentals Foundation Facebook page. Follow it, like all the posts, and look at all the awesome information that we're getting there. We also put out... CHA has an open waiting list. Chicago Housing Authority, they opened their waiting list, and it actually opened today, August 21st, so you definitely should get to that Facebook page and see what type of awesome information we have there. So today we're going to be talking about unpacking the recipients of brand new construction and housing, navigating the inclusion debate. We're still on, you know, trying to figure out who is going to get these affordable housing units and who are they affordable for and why aren't they affordable for some people. So the last episode, you know, we talked about the area median income. I kind of unpacked that, but as I did my research and just dived into it, and I said the numbers a little bit wrong, and I said AMI, area median income, most affordable housing projects, the recipient of those units can't make more than 30% of an AMI. And so then I said, okay, so if your income is $100,000, then you can't make more than... So if the project is an AMI in that area, and AMI is area median income, so if the AMI in that area is $100,000 is the average income, but the affordable housing project requirement is you can't make more than 30% of AMI. So that means your income would be less than $30,000. And that will qualify you for the apartment, okay? So if the AMI is between 30 to 50, you can't make more than 30 to 50%, then your income would be less than $50,000 to be qualified for that unit. So I just wanted to touch back on that. I do have an article that's just really unpacking AMI in its entirety, because when I realized that, yeah, I was saying the numbers backwards, I'm like, wait a minute, let me really, really, really understand this so I don't give out the wrong information. Okay, so then this article is coming out on LinkedIn today. It's the Eviction Space newsletter, LinkedIn, the Eviction Space newsletter. And this is unpacking the recipients of brand new construction and housing, navigating the inclusion debate, right? And the reason why we're talking about brand new units is because that's the conversations that I've been having at events. Like, who is supposed to get these brand new units? And are they affordable for low-income families who really need those units? Now, don't get me wrong. It's not about brand new units. It's just about the fact that most of the affordable housing projects are in areas where the area median income outprices minimum wage, even at 30%, right? Or, you know, and so then it's like, this is why I'm talking about brand new units, right? Because that's where the affordable housing developments or projects that I've been finding in the United States, you know, these are brand new constructions. But the problem is they're in areas that's unaffordable for a moderate to low income renter. And so now we're like, okay, the people, I mean, the audience that's having problems finding affordable housing are the moderate to low income renters, but they're not putting no new development in areas that these renters can afford. So then we unpacked why, because it cost a lot, right? And we said in the last episode that the developers, they're in business to make money. And so if they put an affordable housing new development project in an area where the median income is $30,000, then they won't be able to recoup their investment, you know. They won't be able to recoup their investment or make a profit, because the rent that they would have to charge in that area is just not enough. So then we left off saying that the only way, one of the ways, not the only way, but one of the ways, is to try to figure out how to build cheaper. So I do have some research about mobile homes and prefab homes, because those are cheaper building options. But we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about unpacking the recipients of brand new construction and housing and navigating the inclusion debate. Because yes, it has been a debate. I mean, I can't go anywhere without someone wanting to go into this affordable housing conversation with me. I'm like, okay. You do realize I'm at a restaurant and it's dinner time? No, people want to talk about it. And I'm so glad that people want to talk about it. So let's just talk about this, right? Because I'm already 7 minutes into this episode. Okay. The construction of brand new housing units promises the potential to transform communities, offering modern living spaces and opportunity for growth. However, beneath the surface lies a complex landscape of questions and considerations. Who are the beneficiaries of these new constructions? How do factors like policy and economics and social dynamics play a role in shaping the recipients of these new units? We're going to embark on this, right? Let's say the allocation. So as the new housing developments rise, a critical question emerges. Who gets the keys to this brand new unit? The allocation process involves a multifaceted dance between policy mandates, economic realities, and the goal of creating equitable communities. While the ideas of inclusivity is championed, the reality of limited resources and varying eligibility criteria introduces a complexity that requires careful navigation. So here it is, affordable versus accessible. The one central aspect of the inclusion debate revolves around the tension between affordable and accessible. On one hand, new construction projects often come with significant costs that can challenge the goal of offering affordable housing. On the other hand, if these units are inaccessible to those with lower income, the very essence of inclusion is undermined. Striking the right balance is paramount and often calls for innovating funding models and partnership arrangements, right? So then this is where the policy dynamics come in. The government policies at local, state, and federal level shape the landscape of new construction recipients. A form of affirmative action Affordability, housing mandates, and other regulatory measures can influence who benefits from these developments. However, policy-driven allocations can also raise questions about equity. Does policy-based inclusions lead to meaningful integrations or merely token representation? Okay, let's unpack this really quick. Look, you guys. Yes. The policies for, you know, what's considered an affordable housing project starts at the federal level and goes all the way down to the local level, right? But at the same time, these projects are actually given financing. And see, this is where it gets tricky, because they get funding for, you know, having a project considered affordable housing. And that's why the developers want to make sure that this project is considered affordable housing, because they get millions of dollars in funds to build this project. So I didn't understand that at first. Last season, when I was just looking for all the affordable housing projects, I'm like, why are they getting $22 million? And I'm, because really, even if it's an affordable housing, even if their project is considered an affordable housing project and they put it in an area where the median income outprices moderate to low income families, then, you know, they have about 20 to 30% of the units specifically for moderate to low income families, but then the government is actually paying that rent. Yeah, I didn't. I'm like, so they're getting paid to make money? Yeah, right? That's what I was thinking. But it is just deeper. It goes deeper than that, you guys. That's why we have to try to figure out. We have to unpack this, right? Because nobody really talks about these project requirements. Nobody really talks about where the project is going to be. You don't really hear about that. As a matter of fact, you don't hear about it until you see an open wait list. Oh, there's a new development. There's an open wait list. You get on the wait list, but guess what? You're not picked for that unit, right? There's only a certain amount of units. So if the building has 10 units, maybe 2 to 3 of those units are considered affordable housing. They're going to get paid for by either a housing choice voucher or a tax credit based program. I mean, those units are going to, your rent will be paid. So I'm like, okay. So they're getting paid to make money. That's what I was thinking. But then I realized, okay, it's part of the economy. We still need those new constructions to be built because, you know, life still has to go on, right? And I saw this one project where it was built. It was an affordable housing project, but it was built by next to a hospital and a school, medical school. And so everyone that could afford that apartment, could afford an apartment in that building, they were literally hospital employees or students and things like that. And so, yeah, we do need them to be housed, right? And so I'm not talking about that, because the economy still has to go on. The houses still need to be built, right? And so I'm no longer worried about why they're getting the money. Now we're just focusing on, okay, life still has to go on. But at the same time, life is going on with a shortage of affordable housing for moderate to low income renters. Who's going to take care of them? That's what I'm focusing on, okay? And so, yes, government policy dynamics do play a part. That's something that we're going to definitely unpack. But see, you guys, I'm not going to talk about that until I do my own research, right? The community impact. The impact of housing development goes beyond the individuals who receive the new units. It ripples through neighborhoods. affecting existing residents and shaping the overall community fabric. Gentrification concerns neighborhood revitalization and the preservation of cultural diversity are all part of the equation when considering the new recipients of the new constructions. And so here it is. Yeah, I did an example where you didn't even know that this project was going up, but then there's this open wait list. Oh, we're taking wait list. The wait list is open. You get on the wait list, and then you get on the wait list, and you don't get that. You still don't get the unit. That's because they try to make sure that even though these are affordable housing units within this complex, they still want to make sure that people can live, survive, and fit in. And so an example of where it did not work was when in Chicago, some of the project developments were torn down. I want to say Stateway Garden. We'll talk about Stateway Garden. It was torn down. The people were scattered everywhere. Some sent to other low-income developments, and some were subsidy developments and subsidized developments, and some were given Section A, and some were able to move back to the new construction. The new construction that took the place of their old home, you know, because these people were displaced, right? The thing is, what ended up happening was we had these vouchers, these Section A vouchers. Now, this was Stateway Garden. I'm not sure how many units were in each building, but you know, hundreds of units in one building. People's, there were generations and one in these buildings. And so these, the it went from 35th and State to 39th and State. And there were about 8 buildings there. Generations in these buildings. So now people, they didn't know much and didn't travel too far away from where they live. But then now they're forced to go into these neighborhoods where somebody else's generation was already in these neighborhoods. Now, mind you, they were only able to get the apartments in other low-income neighborhoods, although they were not subsidized. They were still like Inglewood, right? Inglewood, Chicago. It was horrible. It was a bloodbath. Some of the people didn't really know how to live on a block because they were always in a block of high rises where everybody knew, and so it was something else. I mean, some neighborhoods protested against it. I want to say West Chatham, that's a neighborhood in Chicago that protested against it. They didn't want the Section A recipients. And so, all that being said, making sure that the recipients of these affordable housing units can thrive in a new environment, that's key. It didn't happen when they tore down the developments, the subsidized developments in Chicago. It didn't happen. A lot of people, I read a report earlier this year where it said a lot of people were still displaced. I mean, I literally read the entire report where they were just reporting on what their plan of action, how they did, and the results. A lot of people are still displaced there. So with Apartment Housing Rentals Foundation, we were always trying to expose the tenants to what's going to happen, expose the renters to what's going to happen or what that neighborhood looks like. You know, make the tenants actually be a part of that neighborhood by joining the block club, joining, you know, the CPA, the parent teacher CPA or whatever. I mean, we wanted to let them, give them a chance to actually be able to function or thrive in this new environment, because let me tell you something, It's worse when, let me tell you something. When you put a family into one of those affordable housing units and the unit is located downtown on LaSalle, do you know everybody know that this is what it is? They can see it, they can tell. And then now you're putting the family in a situation where they're on display. You know, now they feel uncomfortable, and now they're and so when people don't know how to express their feelings, anger is the first defense mechanism. So eventually, you know, it just doesn't work. And then that family maybe end up evicted or lose the place or just don't even want to be there, right? And so then they start on this self-sabotaging track when they don't even, and they probably don't even realize that this is what's happening. But they just know, like, you know what? Nobody here is better than me. I mean, that type of attitude. And so, yes, the community impact is one of the reasons why certain people don't get those affordable housing units. And it's rightfully so. But guess what? There should be, like, classes or, you know, some programs to allow that renter, you know, allow renters to get a feel of what this new environment is going to look like. Okay. Call for transparency and equity. A transparency in the allocation process is crucial for building trust and ensuring that new housing development truly serves the community's needs. Alongside this, addressing systematic biases, fostering open dialogue, and involving the stakeholders can contribute to a more equitable distribution of benefits. That's what we just talked about. Okay. All right. So the debate, the inclusion debate surrounding the recipients of brand new construction and housing is a multifaceted exploration of policy, economics, and social dynamics. While challenging, excuse me, guys, I'm actually on a trail, you know, and I've been doing this episode outside, but I'll hold on. And let's go back. The inclusion debate surrounding the recipients of brand new construction and housing is a multifaceted exploration of policies, economics, and social dynamics. While challenges exist, the pursuit of inclusive communities remains a driving force. By critically examining the allocations and engaging in thoughtful discussions, we can strive to reshape housing development into a catalyst for a positive change, a force that brings people from diverse backgrounds together to shape the future of the community. So guys, tell me what you think about this, because we're going to be talking about this for a while. I can see that I have so much research, and you know, we're going to be talking about this for a while. So I really want to hear your thoughts on it. I do have a guest. I think they're going to be coming on this Thursday, and they're actually going to talk about it as well. All right, you guys, this is my show. So what I was saying is I've been doing the show outside, right? I mean, just enjoying the weather. And of course, I'm this nature walk, and it's like bugs are everywhere. So let me try to close my mouth and continue doing my walk, you guys. Let me know what you think. And don't forget, go to LinkedIn and you'll see the Eviction Space newsletter. The entire article there will be there in the Eviction Space newsletter at 12 p.m. Central Standard Time. Also, go to Facebook and follow Apartment Housing Rentals Foundation Facebook page. You can also follow Apartment Housing Rentals Foundation LinkedIn page. Follow Eviction Space Facebook page, because our whole goal now is to give you as many resources as possible, right? That's the goal. We just want to put the resources out there so that you will be aware and exposed to what's available to you. Remember, it's not about being a handout. It's about being a hand up. I mean, you give a person a fish and they'll eat for a day. We need to teach people how to fish, okay? All right. You're listening to It's Time for Affordable Housing. I'm your favorite host, LaShondra Graves, the apartment lady. And I'm out. Thank you, guys.